New revelations have surfaced about the brutal murder of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was killed inside a Saudi Arabia's Istanbul consulate on October 2nd of last year. Saudi operatives were heard joking and talking about his dismemberment before his arrival at the consulate. In this edition of The Debate, we will look into why there has been no formal prosecutions of Saudi officials on this matter and how the Saudi Crown Prince is still trying to evade responsibility for the assassination.
It was on October the 2nd, 2018, when Jamal Khashoggi, a U.S.-based journalist and outspoken critic of the Saudi regime, walked into the kingdom's consulate in Istanbul to obtain a marriage document. It was the last time he was seen in public.
Where is Jamal Khashoggi?
What do we know about really what happened to Jamal Khashoggi?
Turkish police insist that they know what they're looking for.
Well, the Saudis haven't been telling the truth right from the start.
Horrifying accounts emerged about how the 59-year-old was murdered, who was responsible, and what happened to his remains. After more than 2 weeks of repeated denial, Saudi Arabia eventually admitted that he'd been killed inside the consulate. The Saudis insisted that he was killed in a rogue operation. Riyadh also pledged to punish those responsible. The Turkish government, infuriated by the assassination in Istanbul, kept up pressure on the Saudis to come clean about what really happened.
Bu işi meydana çıkarılması gereken de birinci derecede MBS'tir. Çünkü telefon görüşmemizde bu konuyla ilgili bu sözü verdi. Ama şu ana kadar yapılmış herhangi bir şey yok.
Turkish investigators said video and audio recordings prove that he was tortured before being killed and his body was dismembered. The Turks finally came to the conclusion that the gruesome murder was ordered by the highest level of the Saudi leadership. The CIA determined in November that the killing was ordered by no one other than Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. U.S. President Donald Trump, who seems obsessed with the lucrative arms trade with the autocratic kingdom, disputed the findings of America's intelligence community.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. They did not make that assessment. The CIA has looked at it, they've studied it a lot, they have nothing definitive.
Later in February 2019, a UN special rapporteur leading an international inquiry into the murder concluded that Khashoggi was the victim of a brutal and premeditated killing planned and perpetrated by Saudi officials.
I have insisted that the killing of Mr. Khashoggi is a state killing. It is not a killing by rogue officials.
The Saudis have time and again claimed that what happened to Khashoggi was the result of a botched interrogation. But ample evidence, including audio recordings, has proved otherwise. The case of Khashoggi has come to be known as one of the most outrageous examples of how the authoritarian regime of Saudi Arabia targets its critics.
Doesn't your silence towards this report and this murder give you any fear that such events will continue in the future?
It has also exposed the fact that the kingdom's Western allies are so obsessed with the Saudi petrodollars that they are absolutely unwilling to risk their ties by taking a firm stance against gross human rights violations committed by the regime.
My guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, Said Mohsen Abbas, is a journalist and political commentator from London. We also have Yusuf Erim, who's a political analyst and columnist, joining us from Istanbul. I'd like to welcome you both. Yusuf Erim, let me first start with you. We're looking at basically what is now new revelations, even though they've been held secret, by Elena Kennedy, a British lawyer. And one of the first many things that she has revealed, one, Saudi operatives suspected of killing the journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the consulate were heard joking and talking about dismemberment before his arrival, again, according to these secret tapes. What is your reaction to these new revelations, the one I just cited being one of them?
Well, bringing along Saleh Tubegi, the forensics expert, already shows that this group was ready to premeditate the murder and dismember the body. Nobody happens to coincidentally bring a bone saw with them. So it was obviously the intent to dismember. But this revelation just confirms this sick intentions of this Tiger Squad, this assassination team that was dispatched by Mohammed bin Salman's top aide, Saud al-Qahtani. So it's no surprise to me.
So, Said Mohsen Abbas, we don't want to rehash what's been said, we'd like to go into some of the details of what's been revealed, of which we just need to do that for people who just may be tuning in. Another thing that she has said is recordings that she had heard from inside the mission referred to the Saudi critic as a, quote, sacrificial animal. And there was a discussion about what will the body and the what they have called the hips fit into a bag this way. Again, a very revealing piece of evidence.
Yes, it's a very disturbing account that Helena Kennedy, the barrister, as well as Agnes Callamard have presented to us. It adds another more detailed layer to the already shocking reports that we'd come across over the last year or so. But this obviously gives us a much greater insight as to what actually happened. There was a 45-minute tape in which it seems that Helena Kennedy and Agnes Callamard were allowed to listen to, and what that reveals is these very shocking and very barbaric conversations. The forensic scientists, for instance, said things like, "I've never cut up something on the floor before." That the pieces, I usually hang them up, and even an animal, I'm allowed to hang it up before I cut it. So he was kind of joking and being very macabre and bizarre with the comments that he was making while he was, I assume, cutting the body of Jamal Khashoggi. All of this actually opens something very important up, because it shows the actual barbaric nature of not only the people who did this act, but actually the people who've ordered it, because they've given them very specific instructions. Clearly, this was planned and premeditated, given all of the evidence now that seems to be coming to light in these tapes. That's really disturbing. And if it goes to Saud al-Qahtani, the question really is, why is nobody really seriously on an international level, especially the UN, launching a criminal investigation, a formal criminal investigation against bin Salman, who only this week, in an interview on CNN, I believe, or another channel, an American channel, said very clearly that he was responsible. He said he felt responsible for what happened. Well, damn right he's responsible, because he cannot really not known about this situation, given his top men were involved. Mutleb, who was a very close bodyguard of bin Salman, two men who were part of the Crown Prince entourage of security were involved in this, and of course Qahtani, who was obviously directly answerable also to bin Salman. Are we really to believe that he had nothing to do with this? Even the CIA has admitted that he has a medium to high likelihood of bin Salman having ordered this barbarism.
Well, you mentioned this interview. We're going to get to that in a minute. But Yusuf Irim, if we were to take a look at one of the most damning, I guess, proofs that came when the murder happened, and then some of the ensuing developments, it came from the CIA at that point, that concluded that the Saudi Crown Prince ordered the assassination, and confirmed, obviously, as a follow-up, that there was a team of 15 Saudi agents that flew into Istanbul. When you have the CIA making that kind of declaration, why wasn't then there a true follow-through in terms of implication or an accusations to come into court, or something to be leveled against the Mohammed bin Salman at that point? Because you're having one of the highest offices of the U.S. making that assessment.
Well, one of the big problems is, who's going to prosecute Mohammed bin Salman? Now, the Turks can't prosecute him. They can't get their hands on him. They can't even get their hands on the perpetrators, the 15-man assassination team that was here, because they've all escaped to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is not going to give them back. The United Nations is basically paralyzed. Any type of investigation that's going to happen into the murder, whatever results come of the investigation, Saudi Arabia is going to stonewall them. And unfortunately, they don't have any type of decision making where they can enforce it inside Saudi Arabia. That leaves the United States. And in the end, the Trump administration is quite happy doing business with the Saudis. We've seen the president of the United States also stonewall the CIA and undermine the CIA with his comments. So frankly, it looks like even though Mohammed bin Salman has taken a big hit from a public relations aspect of the Jamal Khashoggi murder, it doesn't look like he's learned his lesson, because he's not going to face any tangible punishment. There's no sanctions placed on MBS. He's not going to see a day in jail. He's not going to see a day in court. Humanity has a short-term memory. In 2-3 years, people will forget Jamal, what happened to Jamal Khashoggi. The crown prince will be coronated as the king, and he'll probably have a very long reign of continued heinous crimes and repression in Saudi Arabia, unfortunately.
So you mean to tell us here, say, Mohsen Abbas, when we take a look at what has happened, I mean, you have all this overwhelming evidence. You have details, dramatic details of dismemberments, and just the new revelations going to all these gory details about what has happened. All of this put together, and you still have somebody, because he's the king's son and actual ruler, not be prosecuted, even though there's overwhelming evidence against them. What type of message does that send?
Well, it sends a message that the world is gradually descending more and more into a kind of a lawless international state. You know, state killings, state judicial executions are not new. The Americans are very good at it. The British are very good at it. There's a lot of countries that get involved in state killings that we never hear about. This one just happened to be an extremely badly done job, and it's the tip of the iceberg of what happens with this kind of explosion of security services around the world, corporations, large imperialist governments, all trying to protect their interests in a world which is increasingly in flux. So they're fighting over all sorts of economic riches. So a case like Khashoggi obviously doesn't really cut much mustard, as my colleagues rightly said. But actually, what we have to ask on an international stage is, if this kind of lawlessness continues, if there is no international body which can hold nations or rulers or leaders to account, then it doesn't augur well for our safety and security as people on this planet. The bottom line is, if we're giving a green light to all dictators and despots to get away with killing anybody they want, wherever they want, and actually just fudge the issue of any kind of international, if you like, accountability, then that's very, very dangerous. Now, the thing is, we have had a form where The Hague, for instance, has prosecuted people like, I think, the Serbian dictators and the various peoples who committed genocides of Bosnians in the 90s. We've had other cases of people being brought to international criminal courts. You know, you can do it if you really push it within the international system, but somebody clearly doesn't want to do this. UN has got cold feet for sure. But Agnes Callamard seems keen on continuing her campaign to get some kind of justice in this. But actually, you know, this is something which I think globally we need to keep an eye on, that actually these kind of rogue despots, these rogue dictators, and as well as the guys who call themselves democratically elected presidents, there has to be some way of reining in this kind of terror.
Well, even after the killing happened, there were still arms sales, Yusuf, that was going on. You still had the U.S., obviously, who said that we're not going to give up arms sales for what has happened. His reason was, Donald Trump, that, you're going to have Russia and China jump in and replace the U.S. And then you had also France and the U.K. Continue with their arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I mean, there wasn't even a stoppage there. It doesn't seem like the West is really true to its words when it comes to following some of the principles of international, basic international law here. That has led to Khashoggi, just one death, but Yemen, tens of thousands to have been killed. And you have this prince, young prince, who's at the helm of that war. So we can see that not responding to that one death can actually give reason and a green light for Saudi Arabia to continue doing what it's doing in Yemen. Do you think that's a fair way of looking at it?
Definitely. The crown prince is probably feeling quite invincible right now. The world can't do anything to him. And this type of lack of responsibility will just enable him to continue acting the way he is. Why should he stop? There's nothing to stop him. He's clearly consolidating power inside the kingdom. The king's bodyguard was just assassinated a couple of days ago, along with the king's bodyguard, Al-Fagim. I believe his friend was also a very close confidant of the king as well. Most likely this probably had something to do with MBS or the inner MBS circle. That's what I believe. You have dissidents right and left being arrested, assassinated. You have the governor of Asir, the Prince Mansour, his helicopter being down. Most likely that was an assassination that one of the members of the Tiger Squad, Al-Bostani, carried out. So this is not just a one-time thing with Khashoggi. We're seeing a trend here. This is part of MBS's behavior. And until someone says stop to MBS, he's going to continue acting in this way because there is no tangible repercussions that he's facing. Some bad press, that's it. He'll shake it off. He'll survive. But the dissidents that he's targeting are living in fear. And this is not just a dissident domestic issue. This is going to reflect in Saudi Arabia's foreign policy as he continues to feel more and more invincible.
Yeah, I'm wondering, perhaps this has a financial aspect to it, say, Mohsen Abbas. We're looking at this most recent IPO, Aramco, which at this point has been prevented from it going through based on the attack that happened to its facilities. And you also have Saudi Arabia hosting the G20 summit next year. And this Aramco thing was very serious in terms of the foreign investments for Saudi Arabia to diversify its oil and move away so it doesn't depend on it. So you have some perhaps multinationals that maybe altogether are reaping the rewards of Saudi Arabia's investments, a lot of it in the U.S., but all over the world. Do you think there's a financial aspect to why the Saudi Crown Prince is given impunity this way?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they did float this virgin bond, if you like, of $12 billion. I think it was the Saudi Aramco flotation. They also have the Agenda 2030, which is loaded with money for various potential corporate companies to come in and evidently turn Saudi Arabia from an oil-based nation to a techie-based one, or diversifying, certainly. There was a conference, quite significantly, there was supposed to be a large fundraising conference or an invitation to corporate companies straight after the Khashoggi murder. And in fact, actually, the multinationals stayed away. Many of the major multinationals didn't turn up. They've got another one coming up shortly, and it seems as though still there are no big headline names, but companies are going back into Saudi Arabia. Of course, there is it's a lucrative cash cow. They have to milk it. But the bottom line is we wait to see how the corporate responsibility angle of companies balances up with being marked as wheeler dealers who don't mind a chainsaw bone sawing kind of leader who kind of sanctions these kind of acts. At the end of the day, I think it is the case that economy always trumps morality when it comes to large national corporations, or certainly Western imperialist governments, most of them that I know. They will always go where the money is, and that's likely to happen in this case as well. But what has happened is, one interesting thing is that a ratings company called Fitch, quite significant in New York, have dropped the A-plus rating of Saudi Arabia to A, because they say of military and geopolitical changes. And of course, what the Yemenis have just done in terms of knocking out three Saudi brigades that bin Salman has sponsored, the fact that they've been able to knock out the oil refineries, that has actually shaken some of that multinational corporate world. So if there's anything that's going to scare people away from supporting bin Salman and let him get on with business as usual, and you know, broad daylight murders, uh-huh, it's going to be, I think, that war in Yemen. That war ultimately is going to dictate whether bin Salman really survives and really comes to power officially.
Well, Yusuf Aaron, maybe it's not fair to just focus so much on Mohammed bin Salman, because if we really want to take a look at Saudi Arabia's history here and do a check on that, we can take a look at, for example, the September 11 attacks, where you had 15 of the 19 hijackers that were citizens of Saudi Arabia. Perhaps we can look at what happened when you have Saudi Arabia do the killing that it's doing. War crimes, multiple war crimes have been committed in Yemen at this point. There's other financial aspects also to the way Saudi Arabia has its investments in the U.S. But altogether, when Saudi Arabia does something wrong, the U.S. seems to either just have a slap on the wrist or not really follow through with any type of prosecution. Do you think that there's a special relationship there that has warranted the U.S. to act this way towards Saudi Arabia?
Well, there definitely is a special relationship. There's a special relationship ever since Saudi Arabia started pricing oil in U.S. dollars, and it's basically helped prop up the U.S. dollar in foreign markets now that it's basically backed by oil. I mean, I remember September 11th very well. I was actually in New York City when it happened, and it was one of the saddest moments in American history and world history. And it was a very, very traumatic event. And to give Saudi Arabia a get-out-of-jail-free card, not even a slap on the wrist, basically nothing, that's unheard of. If any other country had taken such an important role in a terroristic act like 9/11, the United States would have invaded within months, and nothing to Saudi Arabia. It just boggles the mind the way the United States just turns a blind eye to anything Saudi Arabia does. Whether it be Yemen, whether it be 9/11, whether it be Jamal Khashoggi. I mean, the MBS is basically ordered a hit on a top American journalist. I mean, he's a journalist for the Washington Post, a top U.S. publication. Well, what more can happen? I mean, think about it. If this was not MBS, if this was not Saudi Arabia, but let's say a weaker country, a country with less relations with the United States. I don't know off the top of my head, a Bolivia, or off the top of my head, maybe a Southeast Asian country. What would the United States have done? They would have come down like a hammer on that country. But for Saudi Arabia, you have the president going to bat for Mohammed bin Salman, even brushing aside a CIA report. So there you have it. The United States will continue to protect Saudi Arabia, it looks like, in the future, regardless of what their spoiled child does.
Thank you very much. We're going to end it there. Yusuf Erim, a political analyst and columnist there from Istanbul. Thank you for your comments. And Saeed Mohsin Abbas, thank you, journalist and political commentator from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mika Batawa, entire team, it's goodbye until next time.